The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center, with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is a longtime friend, occasional instructor for my classes and his own, Bob Davis. Bob, welcome back to the show, man.
Thank you, Mark. Glad to be here.
Good to have you. Bob and I are going to be talking about, he saw a newsletter I put out a week or so back, and he previewed an article I have coming out in Wash Tech shortly. These issues we'll address revolve around marketing and small business. And Bob, during our many conversations, you had referenced the fact that once upon a time we had this tremendous bull market, and then there was a sea change. So explain to our listeners what you mean by that.
For many years, the government market grew and grew and grew, and we were in essentially a bull market because there was more work out there than companies could bid it by themselves. Companies were winning 30-40% of what they bid, and they were growing quite successfully and making good money. To use an economic term, because of market distortions, companies were basically able to be successful, quite successful, with minimal expenditure in marketing. They had a brochure, maybe a basic website, a presentation, and they'd do a tabletop show and so forth, but that was it. But about 2010, 2011, the market changed, and it shifted from a bull market to a bear market. And now the lack of marketing is becoming a glaring issue for many companies.
Okay. So when you say companies had, you know, kind of a minimal website, back in the 90s, you know, having a what is loosely called a brochureware type website was relatively acceptable because there wasn't a lot of interactive functions on the web other than simply, you know, click here to send us an email. And then shortly after that, the click here to talk to our representative, that type of thing. But with the advent of Web 2.0, the tools for website really exploded, and some people went overboard. Do you remember those flash presentations that would take 30 or 45 seconds to run through before you could click onto any information?
Yes, and frankly, if you go from about probably 95 to about 2010, a lot of the business website were in their nascent stage, and people were trying all sorts of things. But you mentioned something important. Up until recent years, the world spun around traditional business development. It spun around an executive's personal networks. You knew somebody, you talked to somebody, you went to an event, you shook hands, you spoke to a government person, you and your team went down and met with the government. And this, up until a few years ago, the traditional business development basically generated leads, generated market awareness. And again, because the market changed, we got into a world of what is now called digital business development as opposed to traditional business development. Don't misunderstand me. Traditional business development is still important. But as the government continues to try to get more work done with less people and less resources, and the government's working very hard, the government doesn't always today take time to meet with people, to meet with business development people, to meet with top management. They're hesitant to have all these meetings. And what do? To get information, of course, they go online. And this is where the website becomes an extremely important gateway or portal between the company and its customers and its targeted markets, or what is now known as digital marketing. It becomes extremely important.
Okay. So the issue then becomes, is particularly for small business, let me just give you one scenario. I have a client that I've worked with now for about 5 or 6 months. When I went in, and I'm the marketing guy, so they understand that they need it. So prior to me, about a year and a half prior to me, you know, the owner said, well, I hired a BD guy, and, you know, after 9 months, he hadn't really produced. You and I have been through this particular conversation several times, but what's wrong with that picture?
Well, the marketing is supposed to provide an ecology around the function of business development and, frankly, around the function of operations, so that when the person goes out and represents a company and talks, ideally there is a brand or image the company's been heard of. There is mind share, what the company's very good at has been communicated. The website is set up for the BD person to go back and pull up a presentation or a white paper or other thought leadership information. Operations can go get information for customers and so forth. Traditional business development, Mark, would take potentially 12 to 24 months before they begin to generate measurable, consistent activity. In 2015, I had the experience of working with two small businesses and found out during the engagement of working with them that when I spoke about marketing, all they were hearing was business development. They were expecting me to take them into particular agencies or programs, maybe with a little bit of marketing activity on the side, but they did not have a firm understanding of marketing and marketing's distinction from business development. And again, the old days of hiring a BD person and putting them out there is sort of a six finger to go find work does not work anymore. And of course, it's a very expensive way to generate leads one at a time.
Well, particularly for small business, because top flight BD people have never been a low budget kind of thing. And over the past, the same time period you're talking about here, the last 4 or 5 years in particular, I see people with business development in their job titles. And you look back and 3 months ago, they were sales support. And now all of a sudden they're BD. So I think the role here is quite confused and probably never fully defined at a lot of businesses.
Yeah. And I, you and I came up in an era when companies did formal business development training. I have frankly been to formal schools that were anywhere from 1 week to 3 weeks of formal business development training. And today, it seems, when companies are doing much less training today in professional development, there are people in business development that basically are out chasing leads, chatting with customers, trying to close business. And I use that term deliberately, close business, because they're being measured on a monthly or quarterly basis. And if you go back to the very beginning, in the 1970s, business development did not even have a quota. It was relationship building, executive dialogue, strategic messaging, chasing business that was 12 to 24 months out or longer. Today, companies are not doing that. And I understand a small business cannot be worried about 2018. I understand that. But they need to sit down and consider what is doable with the business development function, which I will remind the audience, business development is a function. It's not a person. It's a corporate-wide activity, and most organizations have not figured out how to integrate the activity appropriately across the enterprise.
I would be remiss at this point if I did not tell the audience that you literally have a PhD in business development from the University of Maryland.
It's a doctor of management, but yes.
But your thesis was on what?
How marketing improves business development success in systems integration firms. And you are correct. That is my thesis, and that was my original research.
I read it.
Well, thank you. But I want to make a point here. Marketing is a business function. Finance is a business function. Finance has 15 different sub-functions. Marketing has 15 different sub-functions. even in a relatively small business, you need to know which customers you're pursuing and why. You need to know what services you're going to offer and why, and what's the relationship between the services? How do they map to one another? How are you going to retain customers? All these are marketing activities. How are you getting lead generation? Lead generation, how are leads coming into the company? That is the lifeblood of a services company. How are you getting referrals from current customers that like what you do and are bringing other opportunities to you? Who's developing the collateral with the bigger picture in mind? Who's managing your website content? I share these points because all of these are examples of the marketing subfunction. And again, a small business does not have to spend a ton of money or have a marketing department of 6-7 people to do all this, but it needs to be cognizant of these activities and, of course, can bring in consultants part-time to help focus on these activities.
Hold that thought. Let's pick it up after the break. You are listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire show will be archived at federalnewsradio.com. So if you miss anything, pick it up there. Go there, search on AmTower, and look for Bob Davis's picture and listen to the show again and again and again back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Bob, sorry I interrupted you. Keep going.
Well, there is a red flag, or if you will, thermometer, that clearly indicates whether the marketing function is adequate, whether it's strong enough in an enterprise, regardless of the enterprise size. One is, are you generating leads? Are leads being generated from potential customers? The second is, are you getting referrals from existing customers to help you get new business? For example, there are three kinds of customer referrals according to the Hinge Research Institute in research they did in 2015. The three are expertise. The company performs this kind of work and is known for having this expertise. The second is reputation. A customer has not worked with you, but they know you by your reputation for doing good work. And the third, of course, is experience. You have they know that you have direct experience in an area. The referral's a result of specific work you're doing for a specific customer. The first two of these, expertise and reputation, require marketing. Or no one knows that you have the expertise and you're not known for a reputation. The experience kind, where you're doing work for a specific customer, it turns out that 69% of customers are willing to make referrals, but they're not asked for them. Wow. This gets over to the issues associated with organic growth from your operations side of the house. And the third part of the red flag about marketing is teaming requests. If you're getting teaming requests from reputable firms that want you on the team for the work you're doing, for your reputation or your expertise, your marketing machine's working. But if you're not getting quality teaming requests, quality leads, and referrals, you do not have an adequate marketing function, in my opinion.
Well, let me throw out a scenario then. And this has happened multiple times over the last couple of months. Small business owner is at some event somewhere, meets the program manager of either a current or emerging program. The business owner outlines his perceived area of expertise, right? So he gets the attention of the PM. PM goes back to his or her office, and they look at the company's website. Nothing really demonstrable there. So they look him up on LinkedIn. No subject matter expertise highlighted there. Do they get a call back?
Of course not.
And they call me and say, I just met this guy at this event. He never called me back. I look at their website. I look at their social media activity, and you got zip.
According to Hinge Marketing in Western Virginia, 45% of the time when a potential customer goes to a company's website and looks at the website because they're looking for something along the lines of what you just said, Mark, they never call the company. This is almost half the time because they don't see there what they're looking for. When your website is updated every other month or once a month, and you're not putting fresh content up there periodically, and you're not communicating information there that is focused at an agency or a program or expertise, there's a huge disconnect between what your management and BD people are saying to the government PM and what they're seeing at your website. And that gets back to the notion of digital business development. A survey that was done in 2012 just found out that one-third of all Department of Defense contract specialists are millennials, which means they are under 35 years old, because, of course, the Department of Defense has been working hard to hire and retain new people in procurement. Millennials under 35 years old, 82% of the time when they want information, they go to Google and they look for information. They're not calling up a company and asking to come down for a meeting for a number of reasons. They probably will not call the company, although it can happen. So it is extremely
important. Not early in the process anyway.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the government, which has the procurement people and program managers, which have more to do than they have time, which are juggling multiple activities and programs, when they want information, they're not calling and scheduling a meeting 3 weeks out to meet with somebody. They're gonna hit the websites. This is why the website becomes, again, your portal into the customer's environment, where they can see you and they can relate what you're saying to what they need or what they're doing.
Right, but here's the self-imposed catch-22 argument that I get from certainly not all small biz CEOs, but a significant portion. Answer number one, if we post white papers or case studies, other companies steal our ideas. Item number two, if we highlight our subject matter experts, bigger companies are going to hire them away from us. Item number three, or response number three, if we focus on a specific area, if we highlight an area of expertise in IT, prospects won't look at us for other opportunities. What's wrong with these answers, Bob?
Well. First of all, a company should be able to write a 5 or 6 page white paper. White papers, there are three kinds of white papers. There's technical, management, and marketing. A technical white paper is obviously very technical, very factual, and is focused on a subject. The second are management, where you look at things from a strategic or systems perspective, and you talk about the management issues. And the third, of course, is a marketing white paper, which has a bias. You're trying to sell a particular view. The technical and management white paper should be normally about 5 or 6 pages in length. You are not giving away any detailed intellectual property, and you're not providing a roadmap on how to do something, but you're putting enough information in there that the government can see that you understand the problem and have ideas about how to approach it. A potential partner can see that you really have the subject matter expertise and might be a good teaming. So there are ways to present thought leadership through blogs and through white papers without revealing your true intellectual property. So that's one issue. The second issue is frankly, again, if your people are being managed and compensated adequately, I don't see how they're going to get taken away or stolen. That may be a little bit blunt, but I really feel that if you don't give visibility into some of your subject matter expertise, you're claiming you have this experience and knowledge, but you're not necessarily demonstrating it. The government wants to know if you've been there and done that. So I think there are ways to do this without divulging anything that is particularly sensitive.
Okay. So what about the third issue? If we focus on a specific area, prospects aren't going to look at us for other opportunities. I'd rather be a generalist.
Mark, I you and I have talked about the fact that and I have met with small businesses that their capability statement lists 25 areas of expertise, and you find out that the company has 200 employees or 150 employees or less, which is not credible. It's not credible. So my opinion is that the company should identify the 5 or 6 areas that it's particularly good at, focus on those areas. It should identify the 4 or 5 agencies that it's particularly targeting and why, focus on that. It does not mean that you will not pursue or bid other work. but you're trying to present a market focus to those people who visit your website. Trying to be all things to all people from a process standpoint literally drives the company down to being a pure body shop. We don't care what your problem is. We're going to find some resumes and bid, and we'll take care of it. We'll do a good job. And again, that worked okay in the bull market of yesteryear. It doesn't work anymore. Why? Because the government gets their money today one time, cannot go back to the well, and they want people that have been there and done that. And this is why that focus is so important.
Okay, we're going to take a break. You're listening to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. You can find Bob at find him on LinkedIn at Bob Davis. He will be the one with Robert Davis and Associates. You can also send Bob an email at robert1.davis@comcast.net. Robert1.davis@comcast.net. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This is Mark Amtower. I'm here today with Bob Davis. Again, you can find Bob on LinkedIn at Bob Davis. He'll be the one, Robert Davis and Associates. You can also send him an email at robert1.davis@comcast.net. Bob, we've talked about this several times off air, but you do a session on organic growth, particularly focusing or exclusively focusing on small companies. What is the process? And just explain it, please.
Marketing is supposed to be supporting communication outreach to new customers, to existing customers. And on the side of existing customers, it's supposed to provide collateral and information that helps operations grow the business or increase the business with a given customer. Management today is pounding the employees to grow the business, find new work. I was a program manager and program director for 5 years, and I'm well familiar with the fact that some of the employees who do not have an affinity for business development, they don't know what to do, they don't know how to grow the business or how to ask or talk with clients about growing the business, and some, frankly, believe it's not their job. They're there to deliver work, and business development is there to chase new work, which is the old traditional view. I have a five-hour session that I do that walks people through the relationship between marketing and business development and operations, what business development normally does, and then what is organic growth. There are three kinds of organic growth. The first is just adding FTEs to the existing contract. The second kind of organic growth is the customer wants you to do work for them, but they can't necessarily add it to the existing contract. That whole notion of we want you to do this new work, but I can't just add it on because it's out of scope. And the third kind of organic growth is there's a whole brand new opportunity at an agency where you're at. So you're there and the customer likes you, but this opportunity is with people that don't know you at all. So that's the third kind of organic growth. So the session helps people understand organic growth and how to generate organic growth, because small businesses today who are desperate for revenue and growth can get it from, of course, winning new business and winning new work and or getting from existing customers. So this session walks them through, Mark, generating work from existing customers and empowering the people on site to do what they can to contribute. Even though they may not have an interest in doing it, it at least makes them aware of how they can contribute.
Okay. Now, is this regardless of the type of contract they're on? What if they're a sub? If they're doing a task order work from a GWAC, is that expandable? How does this play in?
It's regardless of the contract vehicle they're on. I recognize, though, that there are situations where you have a small team, three or four people. Chances to grow may be nil. The customer cannot get additional funding for a variety of reasons. Chances of growth may be nil, but it educates people to raise their awareness, to put their antenna up for new opportunity, to listen for certain kinds of information, and again, share it appropriately. Sometimes account teams or delivery teams cannot share customer information because it's sensitive, but other times they can. So it involves whether you're a prime or a sub, and frankly, it pulls in appropriately your 1099s and treats them as team members and not simply hired guns.
Okay. So I want to go back to the boom market, bull market, and the change over to the bear market. But in relation to one area that you highlighted, and that was that largely the business development and even to a degree the sales function has migrated or integrated more of the social platforms into the physical BD or physical sales activity. What types of things are you thinking that small companies especially need to adopt here?
Well, from my experience, the two leading business social media are, of course, LinkedIn, which is becoming increasingly important, having a presence there, having meaningful content there, having language and collateral there that truly represent the company's strengths. So LinkedIn is very important and should be maintained and managed weekly. The second is Twitter. If you think about it, there are blogs, there are mini blogs, and there are micro blogs. Twitter is a sort of micro blog. It allows the company to communicate appropriately and share information about the industry, about technology, about management, about strategy, all sorts of information, not necessarily always about the company, but information that is pertinent to their stakeholders. And so Twitter and LinkedIn are extremely important. Again, the company does not have to hire a full-time Twitter, full-time LinkedIn person. This can be handled part-time. I've had a couple of people work for me in the past that handled these areas. Frankly, Mark, 2 or 3 hours a week, it was not something. Now, as the company grew and activity grew, that went up a little bit. But in the beginning, we're not talking a great time consumer.
Okay, but you can also teach people. I mean, I've coached literally thousands of people at this point on how to use LinkedIn in pretty much a time-efficient manner. So it's not hours a day. It's not even, half hour a day. It's a half hour a couple of times a week to, really start getting it down. I don't do the same with Twitter because I don't use it to the maximum power myself, so I'm certainly not going to coach people on that. But LinkedIn has an extraordinary reach. 1.6 million feds are on LinkedIn. And if you aren't representing yourself there very well, you're really significantly behind the curve.
I totally agree. And part of this is generational. There's a lot of people, I believe, in their 50s and 60s that did not grow up with social media that have a certain hesitation. And there's a lot of people in their 20s and 30s, millennials particularly, that are coming up into the work ranks that social media is a natural part of their work environment and where they go to get information. And this must be kept in mind.
Well, not only did they grow up with it, when I walk into my son's room, my son is 19, in all likelihood, he'll have three screens on, each with a different activity. So he's got YouTube on one, he's doing a game on another, and he's probably doing some sort of chat on his cell phone.
Well, I can barely handle a TV show one at a time.
Same thing, walk and chew gum kind of gig. But there's a variety of support activities. On LinkedIn, I've done company-wide training for sales and BD staffs, and a couple of them have gone beyond what I have taught them. A couple of them have deployed the LinkedIn Social Sales Index as part of the way that they track the activity of their salespeople, both the in-house and or the inside sales and the outside sales.
Let me jump in here because you're bringing up an important issue, which of course is metrics. I have had CFOs say to me, we'll spend money on marketing, but I don't like doing that because I can't measure it. I don't know the impact. I understand that, and my response to that is, one of the measurements is lead generation. Okay, if a company's not getting steady leads each month coming in that management and business development can screen and qualify, it's not going to have a quality business pipeline. Quality leads generate a quality pipeline. Poor leads generate a poor quality pipeline. So the number of the leads coming in from different sources, mainly through the website, but coming in is an extremely important metric. The website traffic, the number of inquiries, questions for more information, comments on blogs, and downloads of white papers and other things known as conversions is an extremely important indicator of is the website drawing people in and generating inquiry. Blog engagement by your SMEs or people commenting on the blogs that are posted and sort of getting a dialogue going and sharing knowledge to show that people are actually reading it. Are you getting other inquiries from bloggers, the media, or business partners? Now, all of this is supposed to generate positive activity that leads to increased business activity, that leads to bidding, that leads to revenue growth. And over time, 1 year or 2 years, the consistent execution of these activities will increase revenue if performed correctly.
Okay. Great place to break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Bob and I will be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark AmTower. Bob Davis is my guest today. You can find Bob on LinkedIn at Bob Davis. He's the one with Robert Davis and Associates. And you can also just drop him an email at Robert, the number one, dot Davis at comcast.net. Particularly if you want to talk to him about his in-house class. Bob, you and I both leverage Hinge Marketing's material, and during the break you mentioned that you sat through a session a little while back from Hinge on 25 basic types of marketing that include both traditional and Web 2.0 modern based marketing. So thumbnail that for us and explain where a small company should start.
Yes, Mark, last month in March, I sat in on an outstanding webinar hosted by Hinge Marketing in Reston, Virginia. And during the course of the session, they identified 12 or 13 traditional business development activities that you can do that relate to digital marketing in the website. And they identified about 12 or so digital marketing activities that you can do. And there's more than the 25 that came up, but just as a point, a small business cannot do all 25 or do all 15 or do all 10. But what a small business can do, number one, is understand the range of possibilities, rank the activities, the top 15 or 20, that make the most sense. In other words, they're doable, they fit into the company's culture, they're sustainable, they can be done over a long period of time. Just as business development is not a person, it's a corporate-wide function, so is marketing. Marketing is not the marketing manager down the hall. It's a corporate-wide activity and responsibility. There are numerous people in a small business, maybe the president, a VP, a program director, a tech lead, subject matter expert, that can contribute to marketing, can contribute to meaningful content. So you identify the potential activities, and a small business may start off with four or five, and that's a few hours a week. As their confidence and competence build over time, they may add two or three. So all of these things are scalable. They can be scaled down to a company with 50, 75 employees all the way up to the largest. So I encourage a company to take this big picture look at traditional marketing, which is still relevant, and digital marketing, which are mainly web-related online activities, figure out what makes sense for them, figure out what can be done in-house, figure out where they need a partner. I've worked with a small business in Falls Church that they do certain things in-house for a reasonable fee per month. An outside marketing company handles some things that they don't want to handle in-house, and it seems to work for them. So a mix-and-match approach, staying within what can be reasonably managed and afforded, at least is a way to get started.
Right, and when we're talking, you know, either the traditional or the Web 2.0, you know, the default mode is, you know, the name brand ad agencies. Well, you may not need an ad agency. There are a ton of consultants out there who are quite good. They are vettable. And they do things as simple as, you know, they'll ghost your white papers, they'll ghost your blogs, they'll help you with your case studies, they'll help you with your PR. But let's talk for just a couple of minutes briefly about the traditional. There's still value in traditional PR.
Yes, and the I got a call from a medium-sized company about 2 months ago that wanted to hire a media person, wanted to hire a person to interface to the media so that when they put out a press release, it was sent out to appropriate publications and websites and bloggers to be publicized. Well, for approximately $300 a month, you can send the press releases to a web distribution service that sends it out to 500 websites, bloggers, media reporters, and so forth. So I'm only using that as one example that there are low-cost ways to get the word out without having to hire a lot of staff.
Well, you know, if you're a student of the market, my preferred method is, you know, the reporters and editors in the government trade press are all on LinkedIn. So you can get on their radar through social media. You can reach out to them through social media, and they're more likely to respond to you if they know who you are rather than getting yet another press release from Vocus.
Yes, absolutely. Their reputation and stock goes up if they are publishing and sharing information from thought leaders in the market.
Mm-hmm. A demonstrable thought leader, where we went back to earlier in the discussion.
Yes, and this visibility, getting market visibility, and having a brand that is identified, when someone hears your company name, they go, oh, yes, I'm familiar with them. They do so-and-so well. All centers around having a marketing function that's doing its job.
But, you know, let's take that one step further. So you get into the press, right? But, you know, your website's not quite up to snuff, and you've been meaning to update your LinkedIn profile for the last 3 years. So somebody reads your name in the press, they immediately go to your website. That area of expertise is not as delineated there as it was in that article. So, you know, your red flag starts to go up. Then they go to your social media profile, and there's nothing about it there. The red flag just says, well, you know, not quite sure how they got the interview, but there doesn't seem to be any baloney there's only baloney in the sandwich.
Yeah, Mark, this brings up an incredibly important point. And if the listeners today remember nothing else, I hope they remember this from my comments. In 2013, I was consulting with a medium-sized technology company in Western Virginia. They had bid a piece of work. They lost the work. They were at the debrief, getting debriefed. And at the end of the debrief, a government person casually mentioned that, oh, by the way, during the evaluation of your proposal, we went to your website to see if the claims you make in your proposal about expertise and ability to do this work had evidence at your website. We did not see it. So while we suspect that you're capable of doing this work, you did not convince us that this area is a particular strength of the company. Wow. Now, if for no other reason, a company has to have a website that is current, up-to-date, and forward-looking that supports its stated and intended direction. This is extremely important.
Right. If you go to the market leaders, you know, you pick the category, there's probably going to be a resources section there, and the resources will include white papers, case studies, webinars, the blog link. There'll be a press section where they've been mentioned in the press for a variety of reasons. There'll be an event section that talks about both their virtual events and their live events. So there's a ton of information there and a ton of ways you can access them face to face.
Yep. So, yeah, and I would encourage any of the leadership and any of the listeners to also consider reviewing information that describes the role and purpose of marketing, so and relate it to their companies and their market, so that when they're looking at all these activities and all these possible expenditures, they have a framework that they can say, yes, we're going to develop white papers in this area. On this topic, we're going to have this at our LinkedIn page. We're going to have many blogs that talk about this technology. So there's a framework that they can hang all these tactics on.
There you go. Bob, once again, you can thank you very much, but you can find Bob at robert1@comcast.net. Or you can look him up on LinkedIn, Bob Davis. He'll be the Bob Davis who is the principal at Robert Davis and Associates. Again, Bob, thank you so much. This is not my day job. If you, like Bob, I consult with a lot of companies on various aspects of marketing to the government, leveraging social media, developing the subject matter expert platform, producing content. I will not produce the content for you, but I'll show you how it's done. If you need help, we'll find the freelancers that do it. And I want to thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off-Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.